Goliath, and then he escaped Saul's spear, and then he finally took the throne of Israel, and bringing the Ark of the Covenant into Jerusalem, he was praising God half-naked in the streets. So we talked about his mountaintop experiences. We talked about his valleys. We talked about his rebellion last week, his sin with Bathsheba, wanting more than what God had already given him. The glance, the stare, the curiosity. Lust led to adultery, which led to deceit and lies, which eventually led to murder. And then Nathan tells the story of Ralph the Lamb. How many of you guys checked up on me on that story? Oh, you should have. It's amazing how accurate that story is. When I was sharing it here, you're thinking, oh, he's making all this stuff up. No. There are some very specific details that match that story exactly. I mean, the lamb was drinking out of the man's cup. That's in Scripture. And so Nathan tells this story of Ralph the Lamb. Of course, his name wasn't in Scripture. They didn't name him Ralph. I added that part. So, but David was busted, and he does something very different, very strange, that most people don't do in those times. After David is busted, he worships God. And we see this as a consistent thread that moves and weaves through David's life, that no matter if he's on a mountaintop experience or a tremendous valley, we see consistently he's worshiping. You see this through the Psalms as he shares his very transparent feelings towards God and his relationship with God. He repents and God forgives him. And through his grace, he restores David. And as he suffers the earthly consequences of his sin, with his family a mess because of what happened, the nation of Israel was directly affected by his family being a mess because he was king, and that was the royal family. We find in chapter 23 David's last words, and just the chapter before, what's he doing? He's worshiping. Chapter 22 of 2 Samuel. We see a song of praise where David is worshiping even to the very end of his life. David worshiped no matter what. He worshiped God because he had a relationship with God. We're told he was a man after God's own heart because he depended on God on the mountaintops and in the valleys. So as David's life comes to an end, he gives these words to his son Solomon. The second son that he had, the first son that he had with Bathsheba died, and then we have Solomon. And Solomon was the son that was to succeed David as king. And David shares these words with him. He says, I am about to go the way of the earth. He said, so be strong. Show yourself a man and observe what the Lord your God requires. Walk in his ways and keep his decrees and commands, his laws and requirements as written in the law of Moses, so that you may prosper in all that you do and wherever you go. And that the Lord may keep his promise to me, and this is what his promise was to David, if your descendants watch how they live, and if they walk faithfully before me with all their heart and soul, you will never fail to have a man on the throne of Israel. So David tells his son, follow the instructions. Follow God's commands. Follow the laws. Follow the instructions. This is what you must do, son. Follow God's instructions. And you have to consider also who we're hearing this from. David, take it from me. I know life is so much better when you follow the instructions. And life will be better for you, not just better for you, Solomon, but life will be better for you and the whole nation of Israel if you would just, what? Follow the instructions. So we find out that Solomon did not follow the instructions. And this is how he ended up. He ended up with his heart being turned towards other gods. We're told in 1 Kings chapter 11, that he followed Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonites, and Molech, the detestable god of the Ammonites. So Solomon did evil in the eyes of the Lord. He did not follow the Lord completely. He did not follow the instructions as his father David had done. So he followed Ashtoreth. This is a goddess of fertility. This was a huge goddess of that time. a goddess connected to sexual worship. He followed Molech, a detestable god of the Ammonites. Worship services to Molech involved live human sacrifices. And not just any human. Does anybody remember what was sacrificed to Molech? Babies. It doesn't say that Solomon allowed these forms of worship. He didn't just merely allow them in the kingdom. He didn't just tolerate them or accept them. It says he followed them. There would be very good reason to believe that Solomon participated in these various forms of worship, as we are told he followed these gods. The sexual worship that was associated with Ashtoreth. The child sacrificing that was connected to the worship of Molech. Now, David wasn't a spotless lamb himself, but through his good decisions and his bad decisions, he always ended up coming back to God, depending on God, worshiping God. But Solomon drifted far from that. How does that happen? How do you just end up there? I mean, way over there. When you wake up realizing that your worship consists of sexual acts with other worshipers of a foreign god of fertility. Or when you wake up the day after you sacrificed someone else's son or daughter to Molech. How does that happen? Let's write this down. Most people do not aspire to end up as a fool or a failure. Most people, I'd like to say all people. Most people, they don't think this is what I want to end up like. I want my life to be a disaster. I want to be a fool. That's the career path. That's the life plan I want for myself. Most people don't set their goals up hoping to live that way. But it happens. Even when you try not to. I hate looking like a fool. I just do. It's just embarrassing. And some of it is, it's preventable. You can prevent that. A lot of times you can prevent it. But inevitably, despite my efforts, I look like a fool from time to time. In college, I worked for a time at a video rental store. And one night at closing time, the owner came in and we were just chit-chatting back and forth, just basic conversation, casually talking, just talking about different things and sharing different stories about people coming in and out of the store. And I told him that night that this big barley guy came in and he went back to the chick flick section and he rented something like Fried Green Tomatoes or Sleepless in Seattle or, you know, Walk in the Clouds. It was just strange, you know, this big barley guy, he came in alone and he'd rent something like that. And by the look on my boss's face, I could tell that he was a little confused. And he said, "A barley man?" I said, "Yeah, you know, a lumberjack looking, thick, scruffy, flannel shirt, you know, old blue jeans. You know, a barley man." He said, "You mean burly?" I do. I hate it when that happens. But despite my efforts, I will look like a fool from time to time, and I don't think I'm alone there. But Solomon really did it up right. This wasn't some small failure. This was huge. You know, every so often in the news, you'll hear about the tragedy of a plane crash. And sooner or later in the news coverage, you'll hear that they're looking for what? The black box. This black box that is indestructible. This black box that if they would make the whole plane out of the material they make the black box in, you know, we've all felt that, haven't we? You know, if the black box is indestructible, why not? You know, it doesn't work that way. But this little black box, it's important because it tells them what went wrong. So that hopefully they can prevent the same failure in the future. Solomon left behind a little black box. And it's called the Book of Ecclesiastes. Here's what went wrong. Here's how you can avoid this same failure in life. And what's so crazy about Solomon's little black box, this Book of Ecclesiastes, is that Ecclesiastes is in a very scary way, very relatable to our current culture, to our current society. We are such a pleasure-rich culture, a pleasure-rich society. If you ask an American what the purpose in life is, most of them would say, well, the purpose in life is to be happy. It's to be happy. If you have a desire, then you should satisfy it. If you have an itch, then you should scratch it. In fact, there's a lot of people that go to churches on Sunday mornings all across the country, and their response would be similar, to be happy. People go to great lengths to keep other people happy, to be people pleasers so that someone else isn't upset, so they're happy. People avoid necessary conflict to keep others happy. People will act like animals on Black Friday to fulfill their desires of a big screen TV or whatever they're looking for in this pursuit of happiness. Who shops for other people on Black Friday anymore? It just seems so, everybody's out to get something for themselves, something more for themselves. We're such a pleasure-seeking culture. We live for happiness. It's even in our Constitution. We're free to pursue happiness. I'm not saying that being happy is wrong. There's nothing wrong with that. But when that becomes our sole focus, to be happy, when that takes over everything else, then things get out of kilter. Our priorities get knocked out of line. And I mean, it's just a great example. Look at where the money goes in our country. Actors, actresses, professional athletes, they make millions, while teachers, firemen, and police personnel make very humble salaries. That just seems upside down to me. Solomon says in his little black book, or little black box rather, in Ecclesiastes, he says, I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. Solomon pursued pleasure. He looked to fulfill this desire for happiness. He started with laughter. I mean, that's where happiness is found, isn't it? And laughter and humor on the comedy channel. But that still lacked the fulfilling feeling that Solomon was looking for. And in Solomon's words, he calls it meaningless. He said this was meaningless. He looked to drinking and partying, different forms of pleasure, and they too turned out to be meaningless. He looked to great projects. He acquired a lot of stuff for himself, and stuff, lots and lots and lots of stuff. Because if he had stuff, if he built great buildings, then he would be happy, but the pleasure that he expected to get still left an emptiness inside. He was trying to find meaning and fulfillment in the pleasures of this world. And we see this in the little black box of Ecclesiastes. I tried this, I tried this, I tried this, I tried this, and it ended up empty. It was meaningless. It was a chasing after the wind. And each step that we read in Solomon's little black box, each step is a step away from following the instructions. Each step is a step away from finding fulfillment in God and dependence in God instead of things of this world. You know, something I've noticed is that success and failure both happen one incremental step at a time. Whichever way you go, if you're going to succeed or fail, it happens one incremental step at a time. Solomon did not wreck his life overnight. It happened over a span of time. One incremental step at a time. One of the avenues for pleasure that Solomon tried was women. And I mean women. With a capital E in the middle there. He had 700 wives and 300 concubines. And he thought he was going to be happy that way. I could have helped him out. I could have given him some advice. That's not going to work. See, 700 wives, 300 concubines, that doesn't happen overnight. You don't just go out and pick up 1,000 women in one night. He added a couple here, a couple there, one from this country and another from this country. And this happened because he did not follow the instructions. We read in chapter 11, it says, King Solomon, however, loved many foreign women besides Pharaoh's daughter, Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Sidonites, and Hittites. They were from nations about which the Lord had told the Israelites, you must not intermarry with them because they will surely turn your hearts after their gods. Nonetheless, okay, here are the instructions. Follow the instructions nonetheless. Okay, not following the instructions. Nonetheless, Solomon held fast to them in love. He had 700 wives of royal birth and 300 concubines, and his wives led him astray. Most people don't aspire to end up as a fool or a failure. Success and failure both happen one incremental step at a time. Solomon had great potential for success. You know, when we go to the very beginning of his rule over Egypt, over Israel. I've got Egypt in mind for something coming up. We're told that the king, King Solomon, he went to Gibeon to offer sacrifices, for that was the most important high place, and Solomon offered 1,000 burnt offerings on that altar. At Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon during the night in a dream, and God said, ask for whatever you want me to give you. Just sit back and just take that in a little bit. Think about the weight of this request. Ask me for whatever you want. Ask for whatever you want me to give you. Just ponder that. I mean, God just gave you a blank check with his signature on the bottom. You fill out the line there. How much is it going to be? What is it that you want? Solomon asks for wisdom. He could have asked for so many other things. But Solomon is so nervous about the responsibility of running the nation of Israel. He's young and inexperienced. He calls himself a little child. So he asks for wisdom. And God is so impressed with that choice. We read this. God says, I will do what you have asked. I will give you a wise and discerning heart so that there will never have been anyone like you, nor will there ever be. Moreover, I will give you what you have not asked for, both riches and honor, so that in your lifetime you will have no equal among kings. So God gives Solomon wisdom, and he tops it off, the jimmies, the sprinkles, is riches and honor. And then in verse 14, God ends with this little reminder, follow the instructions. And if you walk in my ways and obey my statutes and the commands as David your father did, I will give you a long life. So David tells him, as David is exiting this world, as he is about to go the way of the earth, as he puts it, son, follow the instructions. God himself, when God speaks to him in this dream, God says, follow the instructions. The man divinely gifted with wisdom from God himself was not immune to folly. Let's write this down. Neither am I. The man divinely gifted with wisdom from God was not immune. He got wisdom from God. That was God's gift to him. I will give you wisdom. I will make you so wise that there won't be anyone wiser than you from this point on. And you're going to be wiser than anybody that's come before you. The man who is gifted by God with divine wisdom was not immune to folly. So if he's not immune to it, neither am I. We take these notes personally. So as you're writing that down, think about yourself. Neither am I. In Deuteronomy, God is giving instructions on when Israel will have a king, the things that the king should not do. See, God knew that they were going to ask for a king all the way back in Deuteronomy. Kind of funny because it happens just the way God says. He says, Israel's going to ask for a king, and I'm going to give them a king. And here's what the king should not do. God says specifically, the king, we're going to pick out three things here. The king, moreover, must not acquire great numbers of horses for himself or make the people return to Egypt to get more of them, for the Lord has told you, you are not to go back that way again. So don't go back to Egypt. They had a dependence on Egypt. They trusted Egypt. Egypt fed them. Even though they were slaves, we know that when they escaped Egypt, they wanted to go back because that was what they knew. There was a dependence there. God says, don't go back to them. Don't depend on them. Don't go back to them for horses. You might think that's a very strange thing to say. Why horses? It would be pretty interesting when we read what happens in 1 Kings in a moment. So we got, don't go back to Egypt for horses. He must not take many wives, or his heart will be led astray. And he must not accumulate large amounts of silver and gold. So we have three things there, way back in Deuteronomy, where God's saying, someday you're going to have a king, and here's what the king should not do. Follow the instructions. Here's what he should not do. So generations later, Solomon is king. And one of the first things that Solomon does is just before this blank verse conversation with God, before this dream, we read that Solomon had made an alliance with Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and married his daughter. So he's reaching into Egypt there. And it gets worse. In chapter 10, we read these words, that Solomon accumulated chariots and horses. He had 1,400 chariots and 12,000 horses. Then a couple verses down from that, we see where Solomon's horses came from. Solomon's horses were imported from where? Egypt and from Ku. God specifically said, don't get horses from Egypt. And what does Solomon do? He gets horses from Egypt. Follow the instructions. So what else did God say not to do? He said, don't accumulate large amounts of silver or gold. We read in 1 Kings chapter 10, verse 14, that the weight of the gold that Solomon received yearly was 666 talents. Now, talents was an old form of measurement. 666 talents would be the equivalent today to 25 tons. That's about 23 metric tons. For some of you, some of you are getting that. Let me break that down in ounces for you. When you convert from tons to ounces, we have all this on this sheet here. So 666 ounces of gold a year would equal 25 tons of gold, which would be like 23 metric tons, which is 800,000 ounces of gold a year. Now, as of yesterday, on the market, to kind of bring some modern understanding to this, gold was trading for $1,168 per ounce. Let that kind of hit you a little bit. So Solomon's yearly accumulation of gold, 800,000 ounces multiplied by 1,168 comes up to $934,400,000 or $400,000 a year. $934.4 million a year. Now, God promised that he would be rich. So out of the three, this is one that I'm kind of saying, I could let this slide because God does bless and he blesses pretty big, but this seems excessive, you know? And when you read what he did with his money in Kings chapter 10, when you look at his father David, how he handled his money, we see various times where David is contributing and giving and he gives a ton to the building of the temple. And David is just, it just seems like so much more of a thanksgiving type of thing with David. He's gracious for his riches. He's giving with his riches. He's generous. But when you read what Solomon's doing, it's more like a Black Friday, you know, type of attitude here. You read in chapter 10, all the things he does with this money. I mean, there's gold everywhere. It's to the point that he makes his goblets of gold. He drank from gold goblets. That's what he drank from. So don't buy horses from Egypt. Don't accumulate large amounts of silver or gold. And the other part of those instructions in Deuteronomy was that the king was not to take many wives or his heart will be led astray. He had 700 wives of royal birth and 300 concubines, and his wives led him astray. So write this down. I cannot toss God's instructions for life aside and expect to be successful. I cannot toss God's instructions for life aside and expect to be successful. You know, it's easy to sit in judgment over Solomon. And I mean, everything was just so excessive that sometimes it's hard to relate with someone like Solomon. I mean, $900 million a year, I can't imagine that. I can't imagine that over a lifetime. 1,000 women. That's so far out there. 12,000 horses imported from Egypt and Ku. So it does make it easier to sit back and judge, because that level of excessiveness is hard for us to relate to. But really the nuts and bolts of it all is very relatable. God says this is what you shouldn't do. I don't care if it's 12,000 horses or 12 horses from Egypt. Either is going against the instructions. Either is going against what God said. 1,000 women from other countries, or 10, it would have been going against what God had said. Now, God's not a racist here. This isn't something that's a problem with other races, that God didn't want them to intermarry through these races. The problem was that they had pagan worship. They worshiped other gods, and that's what was going to happen when Solomon or any king would start marrying into these other nations, these other women. It wasn't the nationality that was the problem. It wasn't the ethnicity. It was their worship. It was the pagan worship that was coming in with that. It was that worship would turn his heart away from God. See, this is in the New Testament too. We're told to not be unequally yoked. Christians should marry Christians. It's no different than what God was asking the Israelites to do. So what are some other things that God has told us to do or not to do? You know the commands you're breaking. You know the things in the Bible that you're not living in accordance with. You know the things that you're rebelling against, the things that you're pushing aside, and you're living your own way and not following the instructions. See, when you break one of God's commandments, you've broken it. That's what it is. It doesn't matter if it's 12 or 12,000 horses from Egypt. It's a horse from Egypt. It's breaking the instructions. I think sometimes we think that certain commands or certain instructions don't apply to us. I can live with this person. We're not married, but my situation is different. I'm an exception. I can tell little lies and deceive people because in my line of work, everybody does it. It's how it functions. It's how my line of work goes. So I'm an exception to that. I wonder if Solomon thought this, that for some reason certain rules didn't apply to him because he was king. Let's write this down. I am not the exception to God's commands. I am not the exception to God's command. So don't think that way. It doesn't end good. Look at King Solomon. He started off impressing God with his request for wisdom. He ended up worshiping a sexual goddess of fertility and Molech, the detestable god of the Ammonites. He followed them. Israel's most powerful and prosperous king was not immune to spiritual failure. So let's write this down. Neither am I. Israel's most powerful and prosperous king was not immune to spiritual failure. Neither am I. As Solomon grew old, his wives turned his heart after other gods, and his heart was not fully devoted to the Lord his God as the heart of David his father had been. A partially devoted heart isn't a fully devoted heart. I'm stating the obvious here, but I think that's a note that we need to take this morning in light of looking at Solomon's life, in light of looking at our life and our heart. A partially devoted heart is not a fully devoted heart. We need to be reminded of that. 90% is not the same as 100%. There's a big difference. There's a 10% difference. But the biggest difference is that it's not fully, it's partially. Partially doesn't have to just be 20%. 90%, 95%, 99%. None of those are wholly devoted. Fully devoted. God does not deserve partial devotion. God doesn't settle for partial devotion. All in, full devotion. A fully devoted heart is one that is fully dependent on God. When I read this comparison that happens a few times between David and Solomon, I think of David's life and I think, man, David was no angel. He messed up pretty bad. And he did so on a number of different occasions. And when God is comparing Solomon to David and saying, Solomon, you need to follow the instructions like your father David did, I'm thinking he didn't follow the instructions very well. I don't know what Bible God's reading. But when I start to look at these two and I start to understand a little better of what God is trying to reveal to us through this, is that Solomon was not dependent on God the way David was dependent on God. Solomon became very self-sufficient, very dependent on himself. And I think that's what makes the difference between being a fully devoted heart and a partially devoted heart. David, he fell. But man, every time he fell, he was right there with God. He was depending on God. He was leaning on God. No matter how rich David got, he was depending on God. No matter how awful life got, he was dependent on God. And anywhere in between, you see God worshiping consistently. So a fully devoted heart is one that's fully dependent on God. See, it wasn't that Solomon had more than he could handle. It was that he took, that all he had took the place of his dependence on God. So follow the instructions. David told Solomon, follow the instructions. God told Solomon, follow the instructions. And Solomon tells us in his little black box, follow the instructions. Very end of Ecclesiastes, he writes, now all has been heard. Here's the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. Follow the instructions. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil.